You are listening to the MJ Murdoch Charitable Trust's 2012 Leadership Conference, Leadership in a Changing, Unchanging Time. Following is Steve Garber's introduction of Speaker Eric Metaxas from the Wednesday morning session.
Good afternoon to all of you. Last week I went to an opening of a new restaurant, a place called Elevation Burger in Fairfax, Virginia. My friend Hans Hess had an idea several years ago to make a better hamburger, as he put it. He had been working on Capitol Hill, and somebody asked the question, why aren't kids in America being helped by antibiotics like they used to be? Kids getting sick and needing to be helped by certain drugs. And one of the lines of research he came up with was that because of the way we eat our food these days, a lot of antibiotics actually are put into our meats. And it's a longer, more complex story, but he and his wife, who had a degree from Wake Forest in business, they decided we can make a better hamburger. And the tagline for Elevation Burger is, ingredients matter, ingredients matter. And over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, they've been making burgers and making more burgers and more burgers. And they've now sold about 180 franchises of this idea around the world. So they make quite a few hamburgers these days. But a new store opened up last Thursday in Fairfax, Virginia, and I went out just out of loyalty and affection and wanted just to make sure that I was there on the first day. And I walked into the store, and one of the signs that you see as you walk right in past the front door is, burgers the way they're meant to be. Burgers the way they're meant to be. I know that given the fact I'm no longer 16, I can't put anything in my body anymore. Maybe you know that to be true of your life too. I used to be able to eat a pizza at 11:30 at night and go to bed at 12 o'clock at night, you know, and I can't do that anymore, really. I won't sleep. I noticed that with Hans's hamburgers, I can have lunch there with somebody and then go back to work in the afternoon and not think about it for the rest of the day. It's a strange thing to put good food into your body and what it actually does to you or what it doesn't do to you. And just a little sort of finger to the wind about, you know, why good food matters, why ingredients matter. It isn't just a tagline, actually. It's a good way to live your life. But burgers the way they're meant to be. I wrote a little piece about it for our blog last week, and some businessman in Austin, Texas read this. He's a construction company owner. He wrote me a letter a couple days ago, and he said, you know, I've been thinking about that idea, burgers the way they're meant to be. And he says, I think I want to begin thinking about my company here in Austin, the houses we build, the buildings we build, and ask the question, so how could we be a company that builds buildings the way they're meant to be? Now, my question in the little piece I wrote last week was, well, what a question that is to ask, actually. Burgers the way they're meant to be. Well, what about business the way it's meant to be? What about the arts the way they're meant to be? What about politics the way it's meant to be? Could we even ask a question in this room here about a timber company the way it's meant to be? How about a technology company the way that it's meant to be? You think about the Weyerhaeuser family and its industry and its business practice over the course of years and years, or the Jack Murdoch and his tinkering around, his entrepreneurial activities and imaginations, and finally wires and tubes being put together to make an oscilloscope, and you think, well, could we ask questions about business the way it's meant to be? A few years ago, a magazine editor asked me to write an article for him about the vocation of politics. I'm not a politician, but I gave a few months to thinking about the question, and I finally offered him an essay that I called Making Peace with Proximate Justice. Making Peace with Proximate Justice. And what I argued in this piece was that if you come to the Olympia Washingtons of the world or the Washington, D.C.s of the world, and you think, you know, I am going to do the right thing here. It's going to get done because I believe in it, and it's so important, and God cares about it too, and I've got God and history on my side, and if I work hard at it, in fact, it'll get done. And what I've seen in my years in Washington, D.C. is that people like that mostly get burned out after 2 or 3 or 5 or 6 years. They go back home because, in fact, it doesn't get done like they wanted it to get done. And then what are you going to do? Become a cynic about the world, about what might have been done, and decide, well, you know, it's a messy world it is, actually. So I offered him this idea. Isn't my original thinking, actually. I'm building on generations and centuries of Christians who've thought about life like this. But could you make peace with proximate justice? Could you be able to stick with this over time by deciding that proximate justice was a worthy ambition. It was a worthy goal. In fact, if you got something done, it was better than having nothing done. Because you see, if we actually do live in this grand story of creation, fall, redemption, and consummation, if we actually are stretched taut between the now but the not yet of history, then in no part of life do we actually believe that everything will happen now. It will all get done right now. We could set forth that visions of, I want to make a burger the way it's meant to be. But you know what? In talking to my friend Hans over the course of years, he's the chairman of our board, he says to me lunch by lunch, month after month, he says, Steve, you know, one more time, it's so hard to do this, actually. You know, finding the right kind of cows to kill is its own question, of course. You know, training employees to be able to do this well, it's very difficult, actually. Finding the locations and working with the cities and the people, the planners and the distribution systems. I mean, you could, in one sense, make a hamburger for your family and it might work okay. Somebody didn't really like what you did after all. But of course, when you begin to build out an idea, it does get messy. I have been offering these words of Lord Bismarck, the German chancellor from a century and a half ago, for years and years in my city, in my world. But if you want to respect sausage or law, then don't watch either being made. Now, we could hear those words as hard-bitten cynicism. The longer I live with them, I don't think so, actually. I think in some ways there's a hard-eyed realism in Bismarck's insight. If you want to respect sausage or law, then don't watch either being made. Because you see, it is a messy world. It's a very wounded world. It's a very broken world. And it is that in family life. It is that in neighborhood life. It is that in city life. It is that in business life. It is that in educational life. It is that in social services life. It is that in political life. Across the board, really. It is even true in nonprofit life. Amen? It's really hard to do something very well and to stick with it over time. But that really has been, I would say, probably my long interest in life. Of how do you stick with things over time? It's one thing to have a great idea, to have an important vision, to have be blazed with, I think this ought to be done. But then, can you keep at it? Can you keep at it over time? So when I offered my friend, the editor of the magazine, Making Peace with Proximate Justice, you see, I was trying to speak about the vocation of politics. Not having a political vision, being fired by a passion, but could you actually stick with this over time? Or would you burn out because it didn't work out like you wanted it to work out? One of the great gifts of the Murdoch Trust and the Stewardship Foundation is they've planted themselves here in this part of America. Concerns for the wider world, but particularly, of course, trying to work this out in this place of the Pacific Northwest. Long histories, long commitments, long loves. One of the probably more quiet hopes I've had, actually, as I've gotten to know you people over time, has been how do we honor, actually, Mr. Weyerhaeuser and Mr. Murdoch in the gathering together of nonprofit leaders from throughout this part of the country? How do we somehow hold together the honest, with honesty, with truthfulness, with humility, with vision, the entrepreneurial, economic visions and practices of these people who have enabled us to be here together today? As I said 2 years ago to those of you who are here, it wasn't as if they did their work making blood money, hoping that someday nonprofit leaders would gather together in the Hilton Hotel, making better use of their money than they did themselves, redeeming somehow, justifying their work in the business world. They actually thought what they were doing was important, and it contributed to the common good of their communities and of this culture of the Pacific Northwest. I deeply, deeply believe that to be true. And so we gather together to think about, you know, who we are, what we're doing here. You've got a little red booklet on your tables that the Murdoch Trust has published in the past year. Several years, I've been talking with folks at Murdoch about John Stott and about his important contribution in a booklet that became titled by InterVarsity Press, Christian Mission in the Modern World. and watching what I have called, you know, this common grace for the common good foundation here in this part of the country, and thinking, how do you make sense of this theologically speaking? Why would you give to the new engineering building at Portland State University and to the Oregon Shakespeare Theater and to fisheries projects in Montana and to Gonzaga University and to George Fox College and to Young Life and to Lutheran Bible camps in Idaho? I mean, why would you do all these things together? How do you account for that all together? It seemed to me that Stott actually had a very good word for all of us in this. And the Trust got permission from University Press to publish this first essay on the mission of Christ in the world. Stott says quite simply, but with his own profundity, that if we get the mission of Christ right, we understand what Christ came to do in history and does with typical Stott astuteness and brilliance. He says we must then begin with vocation as a way of working this out. And so this booklet was published by the Trust, and it's your gift today. And in some ways, it is a wonderful bridge into inviting Eric Metaxas to come up and speak now to us. When Steve Moore and I were talking last winter about this gathering, he asked what I thought about Eric Metaxas. It's a hard thing to talk about, actually. I said, on the one hand, he is somebody who we will all love to hear speak. I mean, he has a wonderful gift to allow us to listen in to his own visions of the way the world ought to be. But we will laugh and laugh and laugh as we do so, I would say. Somehow, there is a gift here where he can take up the most serious questions of the world. People like Bonhoeffer and Wilberforce, people who actually looked at the world and decided, in fact, you know, there's something about this that needs to be addressed. I think I should do that. I can do this, actually. But does so in a way which draws all of us in. Maybe you've seen the film Lincoln in the last few weeks. Part of what is fascinating about, of course, Lincoln's own life and those last months of his life, working on the 13th Amendment, was he actually did take up in his own way this sense of it was worth working for proximate justice. It was a messy moment in history. And you watch that and you do actually see the sausage being made, don't you? Backroom conversations, I'll do this, you do this, I'll say this, I'll make sure this happens, you do this, you vote this way. And of course, it's not very neat and clean. And dear people, I would just say, I don't know any other world than that world to live in. It is not a very neat and clean world. It doesn't mean we walk into it deciding, you know, I'll give up my deepest convictions about life. But somehow we have to reframe what our convictions are going to be. What are the things that really are going to matter to us? And how are we going to actually have long enough dreams, important enough visions that can enable us actually to keep at them over time, realizing that it is a sausage-making world? And if we hear the stories that Eric has told so wonderfully well in these books, you know, you realize these are people of, you know, our own histories, our own lives. Their stories shape our stories, don't they? So on the one hand, Eric is a wonderful author of remarkably imaginative children's books, and you can hardly believe that somebody can actually think about things like this as he does. But then on the other hand, takes up these stories with a great moment, a great consequence, a great weight. And I would say that, you know, they are the stories which shape my life, and they're the stories which allow me to keep at the things that I keep at. So, Eric Metaxas, we're so glad to have you be with us today. Thank you for your gift to us.